Welcome to the Mother Love Podcast. This is Claire Larson, your host, and this project was made possible because of the support of Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition. Mother Love was created to promote healing, connection, and shared wisdom through stories. Like any given day spent parenting, each episode brings a balance of tears, laughter, wonder, and surrender. When it comes to parenting, no one should go it alone. On Mother Love, we see you, we hear you, we're in this together.
Hi, Mother Love listeners. Thanks for being here today. I'm here with a good friend of mine, Anna Baker. And I'm so excited that you're here, Anna, because you have had the full realm of birth experiences, I feel like, or at least a lot along the spectrum of what we can experience when giving birth. And so I'm really happy to have you here to share those different experiences, how they've impacted you and your family, and just to give some validation and like offer compassion to those who've been through similar things. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. Will you tell us a little bit about yourself, the work you do, what your family looks like, what you guys have going on these days?
Absolutely. I am a mama of three kiddos who are ages 14, 10, and 7. And it is absolute mayhem in her life, but it's magical mayhem that I love. I am a woodworker and working for myself right now, building furniture and doors and custom projects and some commission projects. And we live in the hills outside of Helena with a dog and some chickens and some chicks inside the house and lots of life.
Yes. That makes sense to me. To start out with what we're going to talk about today, you have three very different birth stories.
The first is the hardest one to retell. It was my introduction into motherhood when you don't get to plan all the things, and it didn't go exactly as planned at all. But it's also an honor to get to share any of those stories. I'm proud of the process in each one of those births.
Yeah, me too in my own stories, and me too for any mom who's had to go through what it takes to enter into motherhood, no matter how it goes.
Corey and I were thrilled and ready to be parents, and I have to leave my work when I'm pregnant. I was working as a carpenter, and one can't be pregnant very long as a carpenter. So Corey and I took some time off and traveled for a few months through Southeast Asia and just observing the world, mostly a different part of the world than we knew, and observing people as parents and making our own transition towards becoming parents, which was really lucky. We had one encounter with a mama in a very remote village in Laos, who was raising her baby in such a natural way. And she's the mama that I always draw from when I'm uncertain about how to parent.
I didn't know this piece. That makes so much sense.
She carried her baby with her everywhere she went, because there were probably, I don't know, predators in the jungle and dangerous things around. And the baby breastfed whenever it wanted to. It was just right on her hip. It could eat pieces of the food that she was preparing. She would, she would just hand little bits to the baby as she was preparing food. And then during the day, we observed that the mom had to pick rice in a field, and the baby was left on the hip of a child who was probably 10 years old, who was very attentive to this baby. And it was just such a natural, there weren't outside influences on this child's life. It was just instinct based. And I draw from that a lot.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah, that was a special encounter in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So then Corey and I have never been entirely trusting of Western medicine, and it was very easy for us to decide to have a home birth. That was a very clear decision that we were able to find a midwife in Helena. There weren't very many options then, but we found a midwife that we enjoyed, and our appointments throughout the pregnancy were really wonderful. We would have an appointment at 10 a.m. and we would show up and she would be ready to welcome us at 10 a.m. and we would have an entire hour to sit with her and ask as many questions as we wanted. It was a lovely, slow way to learn about pregnancy and birth. She gave us all the time we needed. I had a few complications in my pregnancy that were little scares. I passed out at one point when we were traveling in Southeast Asia, and that was alarming. So when we came back home, we did some tests and seemed like everything was okay, and we proceeded with our plan for home birth and proceeded as I went into labor and spent a day with Corey preparing our house for birth and for a baby and preparing ourselves for a transition, I thought, and took a long walk in the woods. Saw a great horned owl on that walk, which was very magical. And the day went on and on and on and on, and I was laboring for many hours. My labor had begun that morning with my water breaking, which felt exciting because I was ready. Mm-hmm. Ready to transition from pregnancy to not being pregnant.
Yeah.
And then the contractions came very slowly. Maybe by that evening, the contractions were getting strong. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't dilating. When the midwife would come to our house and check me, I wasn't dilating at all. And so she would go back home and say, I'll be back in a few hours. Call me if you need me. And Corey and I proceeded. And then into the night, when the contractions were very, very strong, the midwife was there with us at that point. But still, I wasn't dilating. And each time she checked me and I would hear from her that I wasn't dilating, it was the biggest physical challenge. It was like the contractions overtook me.
Yeah.
To hear that it wasn't, felt like my body wasn't working.
Yeah.
So that went on into the night in Montana, or maybe in the U.S. I think that legally you need to deliver a baby within 24 hours after your water's broken. And, you know, by my water had broken at 6 that morning. So by 3 the next morning, we were getting really close to that 24-hour time limit. And still, I wasn't dilating. And it was discouraging.
Yeah, for sure. What did she say when she, like, what was her take on that?
She was a cautious midwife. So she was letting us be the guides still at that point. But she was not discouraging us from making a move to the hospital. She, you know, she was looking out for our safety and for the baby, but from a pretty conservative standpoint.
Yeah. And did she explain that it was common for contractions to be coming so strongly, but that dilating wasn't happening?
I don't remember that
piece. The reason I ask is I do this a lot, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a really common thing. It happened to me with Kendall.
Uh-huh.
And it is really discouraging.
Towards that 24-hour mark at, you know, 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning, Corey and I made the call to go to the hospital because it seemed like it wasn't working. And we didn't know whether it was dangerous to push that 24-hour limit or not. The drive to the hospital was the most uncomfortable I can ever remember being. Having contractions and being confined to a car was a terrible caged feeling.
Yeah.
And then the hospital, it's just so sterile compared to your house. So we just entered into the hospital, into the medical world that we hadn't planned for.
Right.
And I was prepared to not be welcomed at the hospital. Coming as a home birth transfer, our midwife was with us. I was prepared.
Like for judgment.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we weren't. We were welcomed with open arms. We were still allowed to make the call of what we wanted to do. And I labored then at the hospital throughout the day, well past the 24-hour mark. And the hospital was monitoring things. And most of that time, everything was okay. But around 3 the next afternoon.
My God, that's so long.
Yeah, maybe 18 hours or more since my water had broken. The baby's heart rate started going down when I'd have contractions. And at that point, we handed over to the doctor who was recommending a C-section. And that happened quickly. There was a sheet put up between me and the rest of my body. And I could still feel and I could hear a baby cry when they took the baby out, but I couldn't see her. Corey told me it was a girl, and maybe they brought her around the curtain for a minute, but I wasn't allowed to hold her. And Corey held her in another room while I was stitched up. And then I was wheeled to a solitary room for the next hour while I stabilized, which was a terrible feeling after having given birth and having had a C-section to not hold my baby. And I felt desperate to hold my baby.
Yeah.
But there was no one in the room. And
I
couldn't even advocate for myself because there was no one there.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that that happened. And that happened to me also with Kyla, was my first, and there are so many things that are hard about that, but like when you talk about, okay, from the moment that baby's heart rate starts to go down, then you're faced with this choice and it's your first baby of like, are you going to put this baby's needs and safety above your own, or are you going to like, air quotes, selfishly continue down this path, is how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't understand. I didn't understand that it wasn't that black and white. And so giving up this incredible experience that I had looked forward to for so long, not only during pregnancy, but really my whole life, you know, it was really hard and really, but it felt like the right thing to do. And then once you're in the OR, you know, I mean, going from home to sterile to super sterile, cold, you know, everything is super duper clean for good reason, but like it feels really mechanical at that point. And I felt like the curtain that was put up, like, I'm glad I couldn't see what was going on, but at the same time, like just because I don't do well with that kind of thing, but at the same time, it felt like an actual physical separation from me. Like I was suddenly a separate machine from what was going on.
Uh-huh.
And that was really scary. And somehow the fact that Phil was next to me and could see what was happening felt really weird too. Like, I was just like, huh, okay. And I don't know. It's sort of like a really surreal, like, out-of-body feeling when you really want to be in your body.
Right, right.
And it's meant to be a moment where you feel really powerful. And part of what is hard is the prize is the baby.
Right.
And it makes it all worth it when you get to have them. And so when that doesn't happen, it feels so defeating.
Right.
And really, really, it just feels like you get robbed.
Right.
of these really precious, important moments. And no matter what the reason is for that, like, I'm not necessarily questioning that, but it's really hard. And then I, too, similarly, was wheeled to a recovery room where I didn't have my baby. Phil had her. The time seemed to go by excruciatingly slow. And just like birth, I felt like I didn't have control over, like, mine was a low blood pressure issue. Like, I couldn't make my body elevate my blood pressure. So therefore, I didn't, like, qualify to have my baby with me. And just knowing that, like, all those first moments were happening between dad and baby, like, cool. However, like, you haven't been in pain for the last, like, how many hours?
Right.
And this is something that is soothing, and it's supposed to be.
Right.
When you have baby and your hormones are interacting in a new way and you're connected through breastfeeding and all these things.
Right.
So I say that just because I feel you. And I think that a lot of other women also have felt that, like, loneliness and disconnection mm-hmm. from a time where you want to be connected, like, more than ever.
Right.
And to be totally left alone, like, just feels really wrong.
Wrong.
I'm going to say
absolutely.
It. It just feels really wrong
right.
to me. At the very least, there should have been someone who was there comforting you, reassuring you, letting you know what was happening, what to expect next.
Right.
You know, and to have to just be there alone. Like, I imagine that the anxiety and despair were just, like, huge.
Yeah.
Which isn't fair.
Yeah. In hindsight, I probably right. could have advocated for myself somewhere along the way, but I didn't know. I had not planned for that experience, and I didn't know what the outcome would look like.
And you just had major surgery. And,
right. That's right. Yeah.
And if you've never had that happen before, it's shocking.
Right. Absolutely.
Literally, I felt like I was in a state of shock.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I had a healthy baby, and after an hour, I got to hold her and had a lactation consultant who I wouldn't have chosen to ask for help, but who was very helpful, and I, you know, successfully nursed that baby. And I don't know when after that birth I realized, and Corey realized, but soon after, we both realized we were struggling. We had a healthy baby, and we were very thankful for that. But we were also mourning a story that we had wanted to be able to tell and that we weren't able to tell in the way we wanted.
Yeah.
We had planned for home birth and a beautiful, natural bringing of a baby into the world. And it wasn't that at all. And I think I was probably struggling from one of the most disempowering experiences. I went into birth feeling like women could do anything, and I came out of it feeling like, well, not me. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And we went to a counselor for quite a while after that and worked through that mourning period, and I struggled through the disempowerment that something had been taken from me.
Yeah.
And that played out as life went on, in that I wasn't sure I wanted to have another baby because I didn't want to have that same experience again. And I knew in order to have another baby, I was going to have to accept that the story could be the same.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I was strong enough to experience that disempowerment again.
Yeah, that makes sense. To have your hope go up again.
Yeah.
Have a vision of how you want things to go again.
Right.
And then have to deal with that not being the case again.
Yeah.
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 Uh-huh. And there's also the piece of, like, everyone wants to know how it went. Right. And so you have to, like, I remember having to take a deep breath and sort of, like, report on the birth. Not that you have to. But mm-hmm. I didn't really know that you don't have to.
Uh-huh.
And so it was like I had to tell everyone, and it felt like a loss and like a defeat and a failure every single time I told people. And it isn't any of those things.
Right.
But it felt really hard to say, like, yeah, and then I had to have a C-section. You know, it was hard, and then to sort of like be measuring people's responses. Like, do they think I suck too? You know, that's a hard part of it as
right.
well.
Yeah. It was and is still the hardest of the three stories for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad you guys, did you think to reach out to a therapist yourselves, or was there encouragement from others to that this particular kind of loss, it was a good idea to get help?
I think we came about that on our own, but luckily we already had a counselor that we really liked and had both used independently. So it was easy to ask for help.
Yeah.
And it felt like something was wrong. It felt like we were supposed to be joyful.
Yeah.
And we were joyful to have a healthy baby and to have a baby who was so lucky.
Right.
And we both knew that we needed to put this other piece behind us so that we could focus on the goodness that we had.
Yeah.
But that was lucky that was easy for us to fall into, because we did need help. And it was a loss that isn't really talked about.
And sometimes that contrast between these very opposite emotions, I think, is one of the hardest things to reconcile and grapple with, because it's like, I know that I should be so happy that we have a healthy baby and that she's beautiful and wonderful, and here we are in parenthood where we wanted to be.
Right.
And there's this other element of like total sadness, and I would blame myself for feeling those feelings, because I thought that it was better, like morally, to be joyful and happy and to embrace that, like no matter what other emotions were happening. And I thought I should be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I couldn't, like, further added to the feeling that I was fundamentally like broken as a mother. You know, so learning to hold dueling emotions is part of becoming a mom, but like, whoa, it's some tough ground to stand on when you're initially finding your footing with your first baby, especially.
Right. Yeah, I think for me, luckily, we did decide to have another baby, and I got to the place where I could accept the idea of having a C-section again. And we made different choices. I learned, as one does, from that first labor and birth. I learned that I needed other women to be with me, women that I trusted and women who had babies before, so that when they said, you can do this, I could hear it.
Yeah.
Whereas in my first birth, when Corey said, you can do this, all I could think was, you don't know.
How do you know?
How do you know?
Yeah.
And so we set ourselves up differently in our second pregnancy, in my second pregnancy. And I accepted that it was maybe not going to go my way, but that I was ready to try again. So we found a midwife the second time around, a different midwife from the first. The first had moved from Helena. And I asked a couple close girlfriends if they would attend the birth and support me in the birth. And we hired a doula to also be support in the birth, a woman who I'd taken prenatal yoga classes from and really felt connected and close to. And then again, that labor began with my water breaking, which felt a little scary. It felt like a repeat.
Yeah.
But I just had to trust that there was a chance we could make a different story, and that we had already brought in different pieces. The day was, again, really similar, with tidying up the house and preparing things for home birth and for a baby to come. We had a friend come in who had been staying with us, and Corey kind of ushered him out and said, maybe now's not the good time to stay here.
Thanks for dropping by.
Yeah, thanks for... Nice to see you.
Can I call you, like, tomorrow?
Yeah.
Next day, maybe?
I don't think you want to be around for this one, buddy.
Yeah.
And then in the evening, because my water had broken again first thing in the morning, just like before, in the evening, the contractions really strengthened. And the midwife came around, and the doula, and my two close girlfriends, and our little house was filled with all of this energy as I neared birthing. But even as I got closer, I didn't believe that I could do it.
Yeah.
And I still felt like it wasn't going to work.
Yeah. Even the muscle memory alone, like, our bodies remember a significant event like that, and it's, like, recorded within us. So if you're listening to the same music that you did, you know, like, it's almost like a soundtrack
replay
where, like, when you hear something or whatever happens that's so similar to your experience, like, it's almost impossible not to be confused as to, like, is this a new thing or is this just totally playing out exactly like the old, which I have to believe will end in the same way.
Right.
It's not even like a choice. It's like our body is preparing, anticipating that this really hard thing is about to happen.
Uh-huh.
And so then, you know, in your own experience, there's no other thing that had happened. So you couldn't, like, trust that things might go differently
right.
this time.
That's right.
And that's when we have to count on others who have had the experience in their own bodies of a different story and a different ending. We have to look to them and kind of draw and borrow
right.
their faith and their hope.
Right.
Because we don't have it.
That's right. Yeah. And those women were there for me, and they were women that, fierce women who've made strong moves in their own life. And when they told me, you're going to do this, I heard them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I still believed it in my mind, but I had no choice at that point but to listen to these women that I respected. And I really needed them there.
Yeah.
I needed all of those people. I needed Corey as support, but I also needed these women who had done this before
yeah.
and who understood. And even when it got time to push, I still didn't believe that my body could do this.
Yeah.
But it did it. Mm-hmm. And I birthed that baby at home. And he was laid right onto my chest. And Corey rolled him over and said, it's a boy. And he never left my chest in that first hours of his life. And I had done it.
Yeah.
I had proved those wrong who said I needed to have a second C-section, that it was too dangerous or not safe or whatever. And I had done it at home, and I had done it surrounded by people that I loved and trusted. And almost immediately, I wanted to do that again.
Yeah.
It was the most empowering moment of my life mm-hmm. to have birthed a baby.
Yep.
And I realized in that what had been taken.
Yeah.
Maybe the first C-section had saved Avon's life. I don't know. But I do know that doctors are very quick to make a call to go to a C-section. And I don't know that they realize how much they're taking away from women when they do that. This is such a strength that we have
yeah.
to be able to birth babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you need that confidence to do what's next.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the difference of going into these all-consuming, highly demanding next few months of your life. Like, I told myself so many times, like, ooh, this day feels insurmountably hard, but I don't have to give birth. And I did that. Like, that's not on the agenda for today. So, like, the fact that I did that is going to carry me through. And I know if I can accomplish this, giving birth in the way that I was able to with my second, then I know that we can handle anything.
Right.
And that is like that's for me, the number one tool. I went to,
yeah,
in hard times.
You know, you can take on the world, mm-hmm. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the difference in giving birth naturally and having major surgery from day one with your baby, you can get up and sit up and you can move. Whereas when you've had surgery, you cannot move.
You can't move.
You can't walk on your own. You can hardly sit up on your own. You cannot sit up on your own. You're really debilitated and responsible for a baby. And when you've given birth naturally, you are able to care for your baby, yeah, immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're not worried about all these risk factors and you're not on painkillers. And
right.
All this to say, like, I also know that there are women who have to have C-sections every time. And by all means, like, everyone's stories are so different. And so I don't mean to discount those moms. And I know you don't either. But our experiences were of being able to give birth that second time in the way that we had chosen and intended to was really, really redemptive. And it's funny that you talk about, like, the women who were in the room with you and the influence and impact that had on you, because when I think about what happened with Kendall, like, we did choose to have a hospital birth, but I was pretty determined and adamant that I wanted to still birth naturally, like, if at all possible, you know? And so I just pretended I was at home, but I was in a hospital room. And the reason I bring that up is part of me being able to accomplish that had to do with, like, the videos that I had watched of other women giving birth, which I didn't do at all my first pregnancy because I was scared, frankly, to, like, see how it was going to go down. I was just, like, nervous about, I'm like, well, what if I see it and I'm terrified and then, like, this is going to happen no matter what, you know? But I watched videos of women, and when I was in the room, even though I didn't have anyone around me but my husband, you know, supporting me, I would, like, go back like a reel in my mind and go back to those women that I had witnessed. And I would be like, oh yeah, I remember this part in the video where they got to this point of pain and they, like, groaned and got down low. And, like, my friend Kate McWilliams had told me those same things, like, make noise, move, like be an animal,
yeah,
in that way, yeah, and, like, let your body do what it needs to do.
Right.
Like, don't try to keep it together. Get weird, you know? And I remember all of those, even though people weren't there, I remember having to call upon all those other experiences of other women in order to get me through the really intense pain or the really scary experience of, like, pushing and having it just burn.
Yeah.
Like, you know, until progress is made. But I don't think I could have done it. Maybe I could have, but I don't think so if I hadn't had those other, like, witnessed experiences.
Right. Mm-hmm. It seems like what I realized in having a group of women at my second birth that we have lost as a community of women is that we no longer attend one another's births. Because I think if we did, we would see how normal the process is and how strong women are, and that they get to this point where they think they can't do it, and they get to these different points, and we would know that inside ourselves and could draw from that when we were in those positions ourselves.
Yeah.
Because it turns out we need each other.
Yeah.
A lot, especially in birth.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. And I mean, the village mentality applies to so many things in our world. But when you think especially about, you know, that traditionally in the past, like, this has been a rite of passage and so therefore is deserving of ceremony, like, that doesn't happen as often anymore. And when it does, it's another thing that you feel like enriches your experience and helps you to go forward into the next. Even just knowing that there's support there at the birth, but then after, like, if you need any of these women, like, they're your people,
right?
And you, and even if you don't call upon them all the time, you know they're there.
Yeah.
You know they have your back. You know that there's a net to catch you.
Right.
And even just knowing that, it makes such a huge difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Was Avon there? I can't remember.
Avon wasn't there at my second birth. But as I said, I woke up the next morning after Cedar's birth wanting to do that again. Yeah. And that was a tricky point between my husband and I, because he had only wanted two kids. Mm-hmm. And I could never let go of this idea that I wanted that experience again. And I felt like I was meant to have that experience again. Yeah. And so luckily, luckily I got pregnant again. Oh. And there were tricky emotions between my husband and I around that. And we had to sort of come to terms with the gift of mm-hmm. having another baby. Mm-hmm. And then I knew that I wanted to share birth with the people, with the women in my life that I was close to, because I was realizing at this point how important it is for women to get to experience birth. Mm-hmm. And so again, we planned for home birth, and found a midwife. We had to go to Missoula at this point because there wasn't a good option in Helena. So it meant driving to Missoula for my appointments. But still, it was worth it because you got an hour with the midwife, and you got to ask the questions you needed, and it was calm, and
yeah,
you had the space to be joyful and right. to be concerned and scared and all the things you need to feel.
Yeah.
And the third birth was different. It didn't start with my water breaking. I didn't have the fear that I had before, because I knew now that I could do it. And we were living in a hand-built house that we had built for ourselves, a small suite place in the hills where we want to spend the rest of our lives. And it felt really special to think about hopefully bringing a baby into the world in that space.
Yeah.
So the labor started slowly with contractions in the afternoon, and this was a new experience for me. And but it didn't move slowly, because fierce children sometimes come quickly into the world.
Typical Ruby fashion. Yeah. Mighty.
It happened quickly, and so quickly that the midwife wasn't there. But again, I had a very close friend who was training to be a midwife, who lived close and was there. And my mom walked across the meadow to our house to also be there. And Corey woke up Avon barely in time, who was 7 at that point, so that she would be a part of the birth. And Ruby came into the world with so much fire and force and was welcomed by a family of women, and by my family. My dad was there soon after she was born, and I got to experience that empowerment of giving birth another time in the way that I wanted it to be. Right.
Yeah. Did you right away want to have another baby, or were you like, okay, this is good?
There wasn't a clear feeling after that, although we are done having children, but I like birth so much that I, on my own, would probably have 6 more children just because the experience of birth is so incredible and so empowering. And I love my babies. I love my children. They're magical, fierce beings.
They are. They're really amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's interesting too, Anna, that you have part of going through these really hard experiences, it helps us to appreciate things when things go differently, right? And that's like very common knowledge. But also, if we're able to integrate all the experiences in the way that you've been able to, I think that knowing the difference between the disempowering experience that you had with your first birth and the very empowering experiences that you had with your second and third has instilled in you a value system where you think that connection between women in general is super duper important. And so since I've known you, which is a handful of years now, you have participated in things regularly that also help to empower women in really different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beauty of these stories and experiences, is if we are able to turn something around and make something beautiful and constructive and healing out of that, it's like best case scenario.
Right.
You know, and your daughters, I mean, all of your family, but they get to watch you do that and they get to see how important it is and what a difference it makes when women are given tools, literally and figuratively,
right,
to be able to build things in their lives. And so will you talk a little bit about that work? Because I think it is really relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Claire, that you're right, that I feel lucky that I got to have all of these experiences. And I think that I needed to have the first experience so that I could realize how important the second and third experiences were. And so that I could realize how important empowerment is for women. When I was 7 months pregnant with Ruby, with my third, I was asked to teach a women's carpentry class in White Sulphur through Red Ants Pants. And I agreed to it, knowing that I would be teaching with a 3-month-old baby if things went well. I agreed to it on the grounds that Red Ants Pants find another female carpenter for me to teach with, which I didn't think they would be able to do. There weren't so many of those other women at that point.
Uh-huh.
But they did. And she's one of my closest friends now. And so with a 3-month-old baby, a 3-month-old nursling, I went with my baby and my mom to care for the baby and taught what turned out to be the beginning of a number of women's carpentry classes for, you know, women with no knowledge at all of power tools. And that experience of putting power tools into women's hands and watching them, it's not dissimilar to giving birth. It is the ability to have control over a power tool and to feel like you know how to use it is such an incredibly empowering feeling. And so the gift for me of getting to teach women how to find that empowerment in their own life and with these power tools that I also love has been such a joy and is a piece of building this community of women and being able to build their own lives and construct things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, there's so many cool things about that. But one thing that struck me as you were talking about it is, you know, there's like metaphors galore here, but, and I'll let listeners come up with those on their own in terms of building and constructing and, you know, but I think what's cool is it's another thing that we are told that is like a totally like a man's thing, power tools.
Right.
Like in our culture, it is way more, if you talk about using power tools, I'm going to think of a dude. I'm not going to instinctively think of a woman. And I was told my whole life, like, don't touch that. Be careful with that. Like, that's not for you to handle. You know, like, you'll for sure kill someone. and it's the same thing with, like, if you tell a woman that she's incapable of something, just deep down, there's going to be a lack of confidence there.
Right.
And I imagine that if today I were to show up at one of your workshops, I would be so nervous because I wouldn't believe that I could actually, it was actually anything I could learn and be successful at, even if I had an incredible teacher like you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that transition is beautiful to watch that.
I bet.
Especially, I think there's something neutralizing in learning from women because it seems like a lot of us learn in a similar way. I have observed over 25 years on job sites, I observe men new to a power tool or new to tools in general that they just walk up and they pick up the tool and they run it. And still to this day, I would never touch a tool, much less turn it on, if I didn't know all the things about how to run it and all the ways to run it and the ways to be careful. And I've found that in teaching that we want the information and then we're ready to turn on the table saw.
Yep.
And yeah, our hearts are beating fast and it is scary, but we can do it when we have all the information and feel safe and cared for. So,
right. Mm. And there's like a reverence there and a respect.
Yes.
Of like, this is something that I need to be careful with. Like, I can do it.
Right.
But I need to learn how to do it carefully so that I don't cut off my finger.
Yes. Right.
You know, like, and so it's interesting.
Which is a really good thing.
And sometimes that overconfidence that might have a tendency to come out more in males is there because they've been told their whole lives, you should know how to do this.
Right.
Like, you should be able to walk up to a power tool and know how to work it. So if you don't, there's something wrong with you. It's like totally opposite.
Right.
So like, just figure it out.
Yeah.
Don't ask for help. Like, handle it. Learn by mistake.
Yeah. Right.
Like, it's not a good trial and error strategy situation.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I think that is interesting. And I think that it's, again, one of those like hidden gifts of having to learn in a way that isn't so full of assumption.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And to do that with like a baby must have also been, I don't know, I feel like for me it would have gone either way. I would have been like, this woman is so badass that like she clearly can do anything. Maybe she's like not even really a human. She's clearly a superhero. Like, so I would have been like, okay, so she's doing this and this, but you do have a demeanor about you that is very direct and like the way that you see the good in people, and this is from my own experience, and are able to reaffirm that no matter what I've done in my life, like that is such a powerful thing. And it's the same thing that happened during your birth with those other women, right? Like, it's being able to offer something and a level of confidence because you've been able to master it. And so then I have to trust that if you've been able to master it, you'll be able to teach me how to do it. And that's really different.
Well, and I think teaching that class, that very first class with a 3-month-old nursling and my mom, went all the way back to the beginning of the story and this woman in Laos who,
yes,
work has to be done. And the option isn't to not do work. For that woman, she had to pick the rice.
Right.
And so the baby had to be cared for by someone else. And they're a really good community to care for a baby. And she was still able to do the work to be a part of the village.
Right.
And I think I drew from that in thinking, this is my work. And this is a scenario with which I can still do this work.
Yeah.
Even with my baby there.
Yeah. And it's parallel to, like, her community really needed her to be able to continue her work.
Right.
For the strength of everyone, collectively. And your community did, too.
Right.
But in a really different way.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's part of, like, the isolation that can happen to new moms, too, has to do with, like, we just have to check out of the game and everything that was a part of our identity.
Right.
Before. At least that was my experience. And it's hard because it is beautiful to be able to rest and be at home with your baby. And there's a lot to be said about that.
For sure.
But then also, you know, it is often an identity crisis of, like, is this all now?
Right.
Like, do I not get to go and engage in the things that brought me so much life
right.
before? And I think there was a long period of that for me where I finally, like, got a taste of that again way down the road. And I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God that she's not totally gone.
Right.
You know, and it was a process of, like, re-engaging and rediscovering.
For sure.
The parts of
right.
me that really needed me to be, like,
right.
actively practicing those things.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a gift to be able to just care for your baby, but also it's very difficult to just care for a baby when you need.
Especially if you're alone.
Engagement. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you're alone all day, every day, and
whew, yeah. Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need your community, it turns out.
Community.
Yeah.
Turns out. Yeah. 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 And this will be maybe the last thing that we do because we're just at an hour. But, and I think that it's interesting to think about, like, it's a similar experience of, for me, it was of, like, men should assume that they should be able to work a power tool and build things.
Right.
Women assume that they should be able to know how to breastfeed and know how to care for a baby and know how to give birth. And so if any of those things are challenging, something is wrong with
right.
me. And I don't want to ask for help.
Right.
Because I think I should already know how to do this without ever having been given instruction.
Right.
And it's probably equally as dangerous as turning on a chainsaw
right.
and not knowing what you're doing.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it can be destructive and damaging and can hurt your body.
Right.
You know, so I think that that's an interesting thing to think about too.
Yeah.
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 It prevented me from getting help when I really needed it, for
mm-hmm.
sure. Yeah. So I think it's good to be like, okay, actually there are people who know about this that can help me learn.
Yeah.
So that I can do this really important, crucial thing successfully.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is so hard to ask for help.
It is. And so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And people want to help.
Right.
That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I feel like that's good. Do you have anything
Thank
to
you.
Add?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She is a mom, and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful. If you are seeking supportive parenting resources, please visit hmhb-lifts.org, an online guide meant to connect Montana families to services and programs throughout the state. It's okay not to be okay. Help is within reach, and you don't have to go this alone. We promise. And if Mother Love speaks to you as much as we hope it does, please consider supporting this project by subscribing to the podcast, sharing it with your network, and or writing us a quick review. We are passionate about getting these stories out into the world, and we need you to help us spread the word. Oh, and just one more thing. We know a lot of moms who are really fired up about creating change in the maternal healthcare world. If you feel inspired to make a donation to this movement, please go to hmhb-mt.org/donate or click the link in the show notes. Even just a $5 or $10 donation can make a huge difference. Imagine a future where mothers and caregivers feel supported, seen, and heard as they carry out the most important work of their lives.